He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 8. Another 8. And another 8. 3 8s. 463-2843. And if you're fond of following along with your telephone keypad, that's 888. Go David, G-O-D-A-V-I-D, Go David, 888-463-2843. Or you can go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, or you can go to the, you can drop us an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. How about that? So those are the ways you can get a hold of us, and certainly welcome your phone calls right now. Now, you can also, whether it's email or through the website, you can sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. The life plan workshops, we do them, actually we're doing about two a week now. We didn't want people to wait quite so long to get into a workshop, so now we're doing a couple of them every week. And we've done, you can see this on the website, we're doing some in remote locations, you know, so Holland and Muskegon and up in Big Rapids. And I have to say that in Holland and Muskegon, both, we've had to go to larger rooms. But in Big Rapids, for some reason, you guys, I don't know. What's the story? we've only got seven or eight families. But that's okay. You still have a few weeks to sign up for that one. One of the get into the news and views, I guess. One of the very troubling developments that's happened over the last week, it's a big deal, it seems to me, has to do with, well, what we call Lady Bird deeds. Now you're gonna have to give me some slack here, okay? Because this is not an easy issue. It's not easy to distill it down. The bottom line is the technique that many families used to protect the house from nursing home poverty. It looks like that technique is not going to work anymore. That's the bottom line. The house is at risk. The homestead, and the technique that many people have been using is called the Lady Bird deed or transfer on death deed. Okay. Up until now, there's been no question that these are okay. In fact, it's recognized in the regulations, in the eligibility manual. It's right there. It even calls it a Lady Bird deed. Okay, and it's been no problem. Well, last week, we received a case where we had initially been approved. So we submit, and we do a lot of the Medicaid application, we do a lot of the crisis stuff. You know, mom and dad goes into the nursing home, we get the call, you know, and then we preserve assets. We make sure that you don't have to sell the family home, you don't have to get rid of the cottage. There are ways to come. It's just like doing taxes. You know, you wouldn't do your own taxes, would you? Well, people don't do their own Medicaid applications either. I mean, it's not a good idea. And one of the applications that we were doing, you know, no big surprise, we got it approved, and then it was unapproved. It was rejected. And we're trying to figure out exactly what's going on. It's still kind of murky, but but between the nursing home, the caseworker, and our office, it looks like they're coming out with a rule in January that's going to say Lady Bird deeds are a divestment. What that means is the Lady Bird deed doesn't work anymore. What that means is your assets are going to have to go through probate. Okay? I'm just bottom lining it for you. I mean, if you want to give us a call at 888-463-2843, I can go into more detail. But that's kind of the bottom line. The technique that many, many people, that we did, certainly. And you know, here's the thing, too. The way most people do the Lady Bird deeds, okay, I'm not a big fan of it. But it has been a way to avoid probate, and it has been a way to avoid estate recovery. Has been, okay? And it's been useful for that. The exact way it gets employed, again, I have differences, but the point is it's been a useful tool, and very useful tool for many, many families. And it looks like they're going to shut that one off. And for many people who haven't done any planning other than the Lady Bird deed, here's the thing with this Medicaid stuff. It's a moving target, okay? You know, you start off and then this gets developed and then that gets, it's like taxes, you know? I mean, we've had the income tax since 1916. And every year they come up with something new. And every year, you know, the tax planners come up with something new. Okay? I mean, it's an ongoing process. Well, it's the same way with this long-term care stuff. Because the stakes are so high. You know, we're talking about nursing home poverty. You know, you worked your whole life. You got your life savings. You paid off the house. And now that's all, you know, whoosh, gone with the wind. Are you kidding me? Well, for many people, that's the reality. And it could be that is the reality for many, many people. It's just gone. It doesn't have to be that way if you plan ahead, if you use the law the way the law has been written. And my point is that they're changing it so that one of the very common techniques that has been used in a crisis situation is not going to be available anymore. That's what it looks like, at least. Now, for years, faithful listeners know, I've been concerned about the Medicaid mortgage, about the state enacting a law that would say when you apply for help with the long-term care, with the nursing home stuff, when you apply for that, we're going to put a lien on your house, which frankly is the way most states do it. Most states do it that way. But not here. Not yet. All right. Why not? Well, because it's darn tough to get something like that. Hey, we're going to grab your house. Pretty tough to get that through the legislature. Okay? So they haven't done it. So what they're doing now is kind of the next best thing, which is we're going to force you to go through probate because you won't be able to keep your assets in this kind of trust. The usual trust that people do, that won't work. Okay? You can't do that. And you can't use the Lady Bird deed to avoid probate. So if you can't use the usual trust avoidance, revocable living trust type stuff, and you can't use the Lady Bird deed, what does that mean? That means it's going to go through probate. Guess who's waiting in probate court? Guess who's waiting to file a claim against it? Well, that's where the state is, just waiting for you. Now, there is planning, and this is what we talk, you know, this is why you're probably getting tired of me saying it. But one of the reasons it's so important to go, I think it's important, to go to one of the life plan workshops. Why is it important to go to a workshop? Because that's where we talk about some techniques that avoid both of these issues, okay? It's not dependent on the revocable living trust. It's not dependent on the Lady Bird deed, okay? If you pre-plan, there are ways, to make sure that your kids get the house and, you know, whatever else. Make sure that your stuff, number one, and this is most important, that your stuff lasts as long as you do, okay? And then if there are leftovers, that it goes to the kids. The problem now, and I'm just giving you the heads up on this, if you've done planning with Lady Bird deeds, you need to, you could call us right here, 888-463-2843, or come to a life plan workshop and find out what the new thing is. This is not set in stone yet. At this point, what we've got is, you know, some reports from the caseworkers and like that. It may not, you know, maybe they change their mind and they don't issue the rule, or who knows what's going to happen. But I got to tell you, this is nothing that I expected. It was not even on, you know, I've talked to other attorneys since this happened in my practice. No, this is just off the radar screen. I mean, it's a complete blindside that all of a sudden these Lady Bird deeds would not, the notion that these would not be a useful tool going forward is just, like I say, off the radar screen. But now apparently this is what's happening. So come to a free life plan workshop, learn about your options. If you're contemplating doing a Lady Bird deed at this point, if you've already done one, give us a call at 888-463-2843, 888-463-2843. You know, we'll step you through it. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. 888-463-2843 is the number for you to call if you'd like to get your question, comment, or concern on the air. Big news this week is the threat to the Lady Bird deed. And why this is important is because the Lady Bird deed is the way that most families who haven't done planning until a loved one needs long-term care. So if you haven't planned ahead, Lady Bird deed is the way that you preserve, have been preserving the house, the farm, the cottage, what have you. That's the tool that's been used, you know, to get something to the next generation. And it looks like, and we don't have, not definitive yet, but it certainly looks as if that's going away. One of my cases just got denied based on that. Which is crazy because they haven't changed the rules yet. I think it's possibly a caseworker who's been to a seminar and told that this is going to be the rule, and they decided to start applying it now. I mean, I don't know. I'll report back in the coming weeks to let you know what the story is on that. But right now it looks like the Lady Bird deed as a tool is at the very least is under threat, and if you're using a Lady Bird deed to qualify for the long-term care and to avoid probate, which means avoiding estate recovery, you need to give us a call, 888-463-2843. Let's get to some of our emails. Estate trustee resigned without proper notice. Brother and sister were successor trustees. There's been substantial conflict. See, right off the bat, brother and sister as successor co-trustees, it is not at all unusual. In fact, it's typical. When we see an estate plan done in another office where we've got multiple trustees, co-trustees, three trustees. I had one client this week who was very strong in favor of having four of her kids all on the trust at the same time. It was just like, I sort of understand, I guess, why you want to do that. But frankly, I'm not going to be party to that sort of Donnybrook. I can refer you out, you know, you can go see somebody else if you insist. I just don't want to be part of that, you know, because it's going to be a disaster. And like this one's a disaster, you know, just getting back to the email, there has been substantial conflict. Well, of course there's been substantial conflict. There usually is. Sister resigned in January this year, so that was a step in the right direction. Brother said today, so he said now in September, said that he resigned several months ago. But this is the first this is another sibling, knew about it. Said he sent notification, it was returned without service. He sent it to a house I've not lived in for over 4 years, did not even own. He's well aware of that fact. Okay, so he gave you inadequate notice. Mom's will was filed in April, within 6 months of that. And that's pretty typical. You know, when you have a will out there, We file it with the probate court. It's not that we're going to probate the thing. We're not, especially when you have the trust. But you have to file it anyway. It's just a requirement. Now, I've been 10 months since her death. Can I still file for probate and ask to be appointed so we can get the estate managed? Well, going to probate court, unless the other siblings agree, right, depends on what the trust says. There may be, see, if sister resigned, right, and now brother has resigned, so who's at the helm? You know, who's the successor trustee? Nobody? That would be unusual, you know. Actually, what if just these two were the only ones named and then there's no successor? Well, usually there'll be some sort of process within the trust to appoint another successor. You know, the beneficiaries agree or something. Well, let's say there isn't one. Let's say there is no process, there is no procedure to name a new trustee. Let's just say there isn't. Well, then going to probate court is what you have to do. And you go and you ask the judge to appoint somebody. Obviously, as a sibling, you're going to have priority over nieces and nephews. If there are more siblings, you would have equal priority, and then the judge has to pick. you know, is this worth doing? Well, it kind of depends on what's in the estate, what's in the trust. But, you know, it's that's the, you know, can you still file for probate if that's the question? It has to be appointed. So we get the estate. Yeah, well, sure. And apparently there's an estate here to manage. The planning tip here is don't name more than one person as trustee. Because whenever you do that, however well they got along, however well the kids got along, substantial conflict is likely to result if you're trying to ask them to be co-trustees. Because whenever you have co-trustees, you're creating winners and losers. See, if you have two people who have to agree on everything, well, people, guess what? People don't agree on everything. They don't agree on the cost of the chair. They don't agree on how much to price the house at, and they don't agree on whether you want it to be cremated or buried, okay? They don't agree. And if one person gives in to the other, well, then one person won and the other person lost. And you may not think about it that way. They may not talk about it that way. But psychologically, that's what's going on. And eventually, the person who keeps giving in, right, builds up a resentment to the winner, and it breaks out in ways you can't anticipate. Substantial conflict in this one. Let's see. I've closed out my mom. Here's another good email. I've closed. If you want to send us an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. Just that's the way to do it. I've closed out my mom's estate and divided monies among my siblings, left a reserve given advice by the estate attorney and tax preparer in case she owed the IRS. I filed her taxes in February. So far, I haven't heard. So I plan to distribute the rest on 1st of October. Received a summons. Now, get this. So the bulk of the, and this is, again, I wish this was uncommon. It isn't. The, and this is a pretty quick, administration. So in February, we filed the taxes. We got a reserve, right? Going to distribute it on 1st of October. That's the idea. And what happens? Well, one of the siblings, now I've received a summons from one of my siblings to appear in small claims court in November for her share. So now you're getting sued. I should tell you, this sibling hasn't communicated with me since 06, only through her attorney and mine at the time. My question is, how do I handle the notice from small claims court? Well, number one, the attorney usually isn't involved, or can't be involved, actually, in a small claims action. And if you've got a any question that arises regarding a trust or an estate has to be dealt with in the probate court. So what you could do is you could remove this thing to probate, you know, remove it to the probate court. That would be the appropriate court, the appropriate forum to decide on these issues. But it doesn't sound like sister, that the person complaining here is complaining about anything but the timing. They just want their money. So call them up and say, hey, if you sign off here releasing me, I'll give you your money. Remember, as a trustee or personal representative, you never want to distribute funds. You never give funds, but you get a receipt and release. A receipt saying, yeah, I got the money, and a release saying, I think you did a terrific job. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Looking forward to seeing you at one of our life plan workshops. Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a call, why don't you? 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. If you have a question, a comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering how does that Medicaid stuff work and how do I pay for long-term care, whether it's at-home care, skilled nursing care, you know, the traditional nursing home type stuff, assisted living, what have you, now's the time to call, 888-463-2843. We also deal with real estate and business law. So if you're looking to buy or sell a home or want to start a business or keep that business going or wrap it up, fold your tents and steal off into the night, well, just give us a call, 888-463-2843. 2843. Short and short of the big news this week is that the Lady Bird deed, the technique that most people use to avoid probate, in a Medicaid situation is under attack. It looks like it may be disallowed entirely. This is not official yet, but that's the way the wind's blowing. If you have a question about that, give us a call, 888-463-2843, or just go to the podcast section, and we spent a lot of time on that earlier today. But more than happy to take a call on that. The let's see, that's really the big news. I mean, this whole Lady Bird deed, Lady Bird deed thing, very troubling. And like I say, it's something we cover in the Life Plan Workshop. We don't rely on the Lady Bird deed simply because there's no protection with the Lady Bird deed. There's no protection from the Medicaid mortgages that most states do. Michigan doesn't do them yet, but most states do have these liens that they put against the house, and the Lady Bird deed doesn't help you there. Well, Michigan doesn't have that, although we've been anticipating for years now. We've been anticipating that Michigan would. So this whole Lady Bird thing for people who we've done pre-planning for, it's nothing you have to worry about. We've been sort of anticipating the solution for the Medicaid mortgages is the same solution for this, what they're doing with the Lady Bird deed now. So you're okay. But if you've been counting on the Lady Bird deed as a way to plan your estate, you got another thing coming, it looks like. Let's see. Get to some of our emails here. Powers of attorney. I need to sign documents on behalf of a person not a U.S. citizen or resident. I will have power of attorney issued abroad. What do I need to be able to use this power of attorney here? Well, what that person has to do is go to a U.S. consulate or embassy, wherever they are, and have it notarized there. We've had from time to time, we've had them accepted in the U.S. where you had a translation or something like that, but they always went through the consulate. You know, you always have to go through the consulate to get that thing verified. Otherwise, you're gonna have a very difficult time getting anyone to accept it. We've got Mike from Grand Rapids online. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Good morning, Mr. Carrier. How are you today?
Perking and working, man. Having a ball.
That's good. Well, here's the situation. My mom passed away last Thursday.
Okay.
She has a house that is in both mine and her name.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming basically that house is mine at this point. I've got two siblings. She wanted everything to be split up one-third, one-third, one-third. There's also some sort of a retirement account, and I've not got all the details on that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Do I really need to get an attorney to go through all this and probate and all that kind of stuff? I understand I have to post something in a paper saying that if there's any claims to the estate, you have to come forward within...
Right, right. Four months.
Yeah.
4 months, yeah. Do you have a copy of the deed in front of you, by any chance?
I do not, but it's under both of our names.
Yeah, you know, people say that a lot, and it turns out about 30-40% of the time, what happened was they created what we call tenants in common, as opposed to a joint tenancy. And
it's a joint tenancy. It says my name and my mom's name jointly, and something or other.
With full rights of survivorship?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, then there you go. Okay, well, so you're at the 60%. That's good. Then the house is yours. And depending on what it says on the retirement account may be yours as well. Do you have any idea what's in the retirement account, how much money we're talking about?
I'm guessing between $30,000 and
$60,000. See, the more there is, the more it makes sense to take that money out over your life expectancy, which is one of the things, if you're the sole beneficiary, one of the things you can elect to do is what we call stretch-out treatment. And what that means is, go ahead. The stretch treatment just means that rather than take a lump sum from the when you say retirement account, I'm guessing 401k, 403b, IRA.
Yeah, it's through some investment company, Wachovia or something like that.
Yeah, but is it IRA money?
I believe some of it may be, but the majority of it, I believe, is just stock investments.
Oh, okay. Well, Well, they're treated differently. If your mom owns stock in various companies, then on her date of death, the what we call the tax basis in those stocks adjusted to fair market value. So you can sell those, and if your mom had gains built into those stocks, well, she doesn't have to. You don't have to pay any tax on it.
Okay.
So that's even, Stephen. On the retirement money, like I say, the more you have, the more advantage there is to doing this, to doing the stretch out. Because let's say you took $100,000 into income in addition to your regular income, right? So let's assume you took mom had $100,000 in an IRA and you just cashed it in. So now your income jacks up by $100,000, which means you're in the higher tax bracket, which means you lose a big chunk of it.
Yeah.
Well, to avoid that, you can take it out. You can take the money out in required minimum distributions over your life expectancy. Do you see?
Yeah.
So it lowers the tax rate, and you have, you know, tax deferred appreciation. So it's, you know, it's a win-win as far as that goes. Now, so that's just if it was you by yourself. Let's assume that mom put your name on the deed, the joint tenants' rights of survivorship, and that you're the sole beneficiary of the various accounts. Let's just assume that. And she told you, Mike, dear, I want you to split it with your siblings. Well, you can do that, certainly. I mean, that's going to be viewed, I think, as a gift from you to them, which unless you, if you're married, if you have more than $10 million, you have to worry about it. If you have more than $5 million as a single person, that's the only...
Not me.
Not a problem, huh? So here's the one thing. Here's what you should do. If there was a will, take it down to probate court. Just give it to them. They file it. I mean, that's a requirement. Publishing the notice to creditors in the newspaper, that's a requirement. And then what I would strongly advise you to do with your brothers and sisters is just brother and sister is just kind of lay out what the situation is. You know, mom put my name on these things. This is all there is. I'm splitting it with you. And have them say, yeah, I understand that this is all there is. This is all I'm entitled to. Mike, you're a great guy and love you forever. You never want to make a distribution, a disbursement, without getting back that piece of paper that says, I got the money and I think you did a great job. Are you with me on this?
Yes.
Because 6 years from now, and they decide, well, you know, mom had all those gold bars in the basement and Mike never split those with us. You know, people make stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not necessarily your siblings who'd be doing it, because you're doing them a very good turn by, you know, honoring your mother's wishes. And that's all it is. It's your mom's wishes. You know, I kind of wish that you would do this. There's nothing enforceable about it.
Right.
So I think it's a great thing that you're doing. I would just like to see you be protected against
any
potential blowback. You know, so that's, you know, that's what I would say. Are you living in the house? Are you going to sell the house or what?
I'm going to sell the house.
Yeah. If you want off the air, I can give you, I can give you a couple of realtors. Unlike, you know, if you've got people you're working with, that's great. If not, I can make some recommendations.
Sure. I'd appreciate that.
All right. Then if you want to hold on, I'll just tell you. The guy's name is John Bodine. He's over at Greenridge.
Okay. All right.
Just give him a shout. He'll get the job done for you. And just tell him Dave sent you.
All right. I really appreciate that.
Not a problem, Mike. You take care.
Thank you. You too, sir.
You bet. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, reminding you that 888-463-2843 is the number for you to call if you'd like to get your question on the air, or if you'd like to sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. We're going to be adding a section on the life plan workshops to deal specifically with the new threat to crisis planning. This is not a threat to the long-term kind of planning that we've been doing, but when you're in crisis, the Lady Bird Deed has been a very useful tool. It looks like that's going away now. We'll let you know as the situation develops, but it's the current situation not a good one. I mean, very, very concerned about it. And like I say, we'll be dealing with that in the upcoming life plan workshops. If you're in Muskegon or Holland and you were told that the life plan workshop is full, This is the one that's on the website. It's coming up next month. No problem. We got some additional room, so call back. You can call back and sign up if you'd like to come on down. We do try to, you know, when we do them at home in the office in Grand Rapids in our own classroom, we try to limit them, you know, to around 20, 24 at the very most. When we go on the road, because, you know, it's just more convenient for folks, we'll do them a little bit larger. But, you know, it's the same good stuff. So if you're interested in coming to the Life Plan Workshop, we do them every week the good Lord brings, and twice on holidays. So get on over to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. And there's a schedule right there. You can sign up or leave a question or comment. Let's get to a couple of our emails here. I have rentals in Ohio and live in Michigan. Can I appoint power of attorney to a friend there for eviction notices and court appearances? It's too far away to run for court, too far away to get to court there. I don't know what Ohio law is. I'll just tell you, in Michigan, you can't do that. When you're going to appear in court, when you name somebody under a power of attorney, you let them act for you. That's what we call attorney in fact. That person who's acting is the attorney in fact. Well, then they can do stuff for you. That's true. But they cannot represent you in court. Okay? That's what the attorney at law does. So you're going to have to hire a real lawyer to do that. Now, one way, potential way around that, is if, you know, it depends on how you hold these rentals. Many people, shockingly, own rental properties in their own name. They have the deed in their own name, which means that if somebody slips and falls on the stairs, they're coming after your own house, coming after your homestead, because there's no protection for you, you know, whatsoever from liability arising from these rentals. So what we generally will do is a limited liability company or a corporation. Limited liability company, kind of nice, because when we're doing them for asset protection purposes, then we don't need a separate tax return or anything else. It's a disregarded entity. So we, you know, slap an LLC on there, put the property into the LLC, all your rental agreements, all your leases, and everything else are done through the LLC, and when you do that, now you're protected. Well, generally with a corporation, it's only those have to be represented. Again, there's a problem. It has to be represented by an attorney, but you can have a manager who usually will be allowed to appear on behalf of the LLC. Okay, not with the corporation. Corporation, you got to have an attorney again. So, short answer is, can you do it with power of attorney? The answer is, no, you can't. Let's see. Just looking at some of our emails here. My grandmother passed away, and I want my cousin to leave. He says he's not going anywhere. I'm head of household. He's not on the lease, been out there for over 30 days. We live in a subset. He's not respecting me. I want him out. Says he's not going. Okay. Let's see. He's not supposed to be here. He's violating the terms of the lease. Let's see. The lease was turned over to me, but I don't want to put my name on the line by telling him not to add him. They want proof of where he stays. He won't give it to me. All right. Bottom line here is, if somebody's not being cooperative, they're not going to leave the homestead, then you just have to evict them. You know, that's really what you simply what you need to do. There's no alternative to it. It's kind of a shame, but there you go. Revocable trust. When forming a trust, the grantor, do they have to be the person who funds the trust, or can this be any other person? So the grantor is the person who sets up the trust. Okay, let's be really clear. Grantor, you basically have three people when you do a trust. You have the grantor, that's the person who sets it up. You have the trustee, that's the person who manages whatever is in the trust. And then you have the beneficiary, that's the person who benefits from it. Now, a grantor, somebody can set up a trust. I guess it actually could be four people. You have the person who sets up the trust, The person who runs the trust, that's the trustee, the person who benefits. And the question here is, can somebody else contribute to it? I guess that'd be a third person, a donor, you know, who puts money into the trust. And the answer is sure. I want to set up a trust. Do I necessarily have to be the grantor? Well, yeah, you do. If you want to set up a trust, you are the grantor. That's what, you know, that's what it is. Once there's a grantor to start the trust, can the grantor nominate a new grantor to replace them? Well, no. The grantor can name who the trustee is going to be, generally, so long as you've reserved that right, which generally people do. You say, yeah, I can fire this trustee and appoint somebody else. It says, not the trustee. I know this one is nominated by grantor. It can only be changed by it, by the grantor. Well, actually, that isn't quite true. It is true that when you create a trust, you have to name a trustee. But you could, in the body of the trust, leave it up to someone else to change the trustees. See, this just gets to one of the problems we have dealing in this area, and it keeps coming up. And when people say, well, I have a revocable trust, or I have a power of attorney, or I have mom put me on the deed. We had a call like that earlier today. Mom put me on the deed. The problem is all those labels are used a lot. You know, people say, oh, I have a trust. I have a power of attorney. I don't have to worry. I did this and that. The problem is that the labels really don't help you very much. When somebody says, I'm on the deed. Well, what does that mean? What, are you a transfer on death beneficiary? Are you a tenant in common? Are you a joint tenant? Do you have the right to occupy the property now? I mean, what is the story? You know, what is going on? You don't know until you read it. Lots of people have trusts. Okay, I got a trust. I don't have to worry. I've got a trust. Okay, but until we read the trust, we really don't know what's going on. For example, we use a lot of irrevocable trusts in our planning. It looks like it's going to be the only game in town if you want to hang on to the house through the Medicaid process. But irrevocable trust, there's a kind of irrevocable trust, a tax planning trust, where you completely give up control. Well, we don't do that. You know, that's not we're not tax planning here. We're long-term care planning. Okay, very, very different. Very, very different consequences. Okay, so it's kind of frustrating to folks that, you know, it's not that simple. You can't just say, look, you know, if you say I want an egg, well, you pretty much know what an egg looks like. But it's not that way with trusts. That music means that you've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, looking forward to seeing you at one of our life plan workshops.